Well, we've been working our way through the book of Acts in the pursuit of what we were talking about earlier. We've ordained deacons now, two sets of deacons over the last 12 months or so, and we're getting ready to ordain elders. And the whole reason that we're doing that is that we're pursuing this idea of what church actually is. Before I come to the message, though, I just want to pop this up on the screen and let you know that this parenting seminar that's coming up is something that I think it would be very profitable for you to attend. If you're a grandparent, if you're a parent, if you're thinking about being a parent someday, if you're a child that wonders about his parents, I don't know, but we're going to be looking at a series of memos that your children would write to you if they had the good sense to know God's Word and know what's good for them. And I really think it would be a profitable time. You can go to 31memos.com and actually download a file there that you can, where you'll be able to register, and you'll actually save some money if you register before December 25th. So I'll just tell you that, and we'll move on. We're working our way through the book of Acts in this series that we've entitled Don't Go to Church, Be the Church. We're at part 42, and there's actually only one more part of the book of Acts that we're going to look at. And we'll do that on January 3rd is when we'll finish the book of Acts. That'll be the day that we ordain elders, and it's just going to be a banner day for our church. We'll have some missionaries with us at that time as well. But part 42 is entitled Out of the Frying Pan and Into the Fire, and I'm absolutely confident you'll know why we've entitled it that by the time we're done. We've been working our way through the book of Acts, again, as I said, in this pursuit of, you know, what actually is church? What is it that if you're missing this element or that element or that element, you don't really have a church? What are the things that we should be chasing? What are the things that we should be building here as a fellowship? And we've taken bits and pieces of the book of Acts as we've gone, and like I said, we've got one this morning, and we've got one more on January 3rd, and we'll be done with the book of Acts and ready to launch into the book of Romans. But the good news, as we've mentioned, has traveled like wildfire. It's burned its way all the way up the Middle East and into Asia, across Asia, and then into Europe over there in the West. The good news has traveled, and that's one of the things that the church does. It makes sure that the good news gets told. If you're going to be a church, you're going to make sure that the good news is told, not only in your neighborhood, not only in your community, but around the world. You want to be involved in as many places as you can, getting the good news out to people that need to hear it, which would be pretty much everybody on the planet. But that's what the church does. Each one of these churches then have been established as we've made our way around that, around the Mediterranean, from east all the way over to northwest in the Mediterranean. Every one of those churches that's been established has its own leadership in place and is teaching the Word of God. They're growing together, and listen to me, God's people are in ministry in those churches because that's what the church is. That's what the church does. That's how you qualify as a church. And the good news has gone where it hasn't been before. Last week, Chad and Carl walked us through the end of Acts chapter 27, where we learned that the ship that Paul was in, you remember that story that they told? The ship that Paul was in and had been driven by the hurricane in a generally westerly direction. They had intended to just kind of get on the north side of Crete and spend the winter there, but as soon as they put out from Crete, they were blown by that hurricane, that typhoon, across in a westerly direction. And it finally run aground on the island of Malta, or almost on the island of Malta, there in the Mediterranean, on the western side of the Mediterranean. We thought of the storm as we made our way through. As I've talked about it, we've had two Sundays now to talk about the storm. And we've used the storm as an illustration of the kind of things that happen in our lives. And I heard Chad and Carl say, I actually listened to it on Monday night on the way home from the airport, I heard Chad and Carl both say that, you know, we're all facing storms. They both said that there are things going on in your lives that they're aware of right now that would qualify as a storm, not a literal hurricane that's blowing through, although who knows what's going to happen later on this afternoon. If you look at the weather map there, it's a little dicey out there. But a storm that's blowing through your life right now, a lack of finances or a lack of funds or a lack of time or other things that are going wrong in your life. 2 weeks ago, we wondered what kind of an attitude we should have when a storm comes. Last week, we wondered what kind of action we should take when a storm comes. And well, we're going to do kind of the third in the series on the storms of life, and well, because something's going to happen today that's a result of the storm, but it's just kind of the last straw on the camel's back as far as Paul might be concerned. But we face storms in life. And we all know, I know we all know this, that we all have a tendency to fix things when they go wrong, right? When the storm begins to blow, we start looking for ways to fix stuff. If I could just get a couple of extra hours overtime, or if I could just get a couple of hours here where I could work on this thing, or if I could just get to this particular doctor who might give me a different diagnosis, or if I could just talk this cop out of writing me a ticket now that he's pulled me over. If I could just do that, things would be smoother for me right now. And we try to fix stuff. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands. I expect every one of us here. When the storm begins to blow, I expect that every one of us looks for ways to fix that. Hear what I'm saying now. I don't blame you for that. I don't blame you one bit. And I hope you don't feel guilty when you try to fix things. This is a very natural thing. And if you can fix the situation, by all means, fix it. We wouldn't fault you for that. But I do want to point out this morning that things worked kind of backwards for Paul when it came to fixing what was going on. It was a hurricane that he's caught in front of, and it's not just a hurricane, it's a two-week-long hurricane that blows them all over the Mediterranean Sea, and who knows how squiggly that line on the map actually should have been before they were done. But it blew them off in every direction, and they ended up having to cut their ties to the lifeboat and make their way to shore. They had a meal together, remember that? They had a meal together, and then they dumped the rest of the cargo overboard and prayed, oh, I hope you heard it, and prayed that it would be morning. To me, that is the most poignant part of that story. That's the one that just catches me right here in the gut. I don't know if you've ever done that. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation that was so bleak and so dark that all you could really pray for, you didn't know what to ask God for, you didn't know what to ask God to, how to fix this or what directions you should take. The only thing you could do is say, God, I just need a little bit of daylight here. Please, send the morning so that I can see where I am and see where I need to go. That's what they asked for. But when the sun finally came up, do you remember it in the story? They had no idea where they were. They're looking at this coast out there and they don't recognize it, and well, it occurs to them that with the waves coming from behind like they are, probably the best thing they could do is make a run for it, because the ship is being battered to pieces right underneath them. And their last little bit of hope, hear it, their last little bit of hope is being taken from them. The ship. The ship itself is about to founder. The ship itself is being broken up from the back of the ship, the strongest part of the ship. It's being broken up as the waves batter it there. And Chad and Carl reminded me last week as I listened to the message of those times in my life when things have gone miserably wrong. Again, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands because it's too close to Christmas to be admitting that we're having troubles, right? We should be pretending that we're not because it's Christmas, right? But they come. It reminded me of those times when I've been in the middle of the storm, when I've lost all hope except, and don't you love it, except this right here. I identify this thing right here and I say, if I could just pass this test, if I could just get to an appointment with this doctor, if I could just get those couple of extra hours, or if that check would just come in, and I tie my hope to that one particular thing, and then God takes that away from me. Has that ever happened to you? Where you came to the end of the day or the end of the week or the end of the month and you said, this is it. This is it. It all comes down to this. And then that thing that you would have fixed your hope to, that you attached your hope to, is taken away from you, because that's what happens. The moment I begin to rely on something, listen, God is inclined to take that thing away from me. Not because he's vindictive. Not because he's mean and angry. But as that thing begins to crumble before me, that's when I'm inclined to just look to heaven and say, seriously? Are you kidding me? Are you up there? Do you have any idea what's going on down here? Must be nice to be in heaven on your, not that I want to go to heaven anytime soon, but it must be nice to be there in heaven on your throne, so far removed from all of this mess, this feeling that you can just be arbitrary and take things. Jay, really? Do you talk to God that way? You know, sometimes I do. Forgive me. I happen to know for a fact that King David talked to God like that. Read the Psalms. Seriously, God? Really, truly? All this going on, and I got this one thing that I've identified, and I've been praying, and I've been asking, and you kick that out from underneath me? Is that really the way you want to play this? And I find myself learning the lesson, listen, that when I fix my hope on a particular thing, that is not the same as fixing my hope on God. Do you hear me? I fix my hope on this particular thing, and I say, God, I want you to notice this because this is really important to me, and I kind of get the idea that I'm trusting him to keep that intact, like Paul and the boys might have been trusting God to keep the ship intact. And what God ends up doing in my life is he destroys even that. That crumbles right before my eyes, because trusting God to take care of that that I'm focused on is not the same thing as trusting God and God alone. Are you registering with me there? Are you tracking? It's a different thing. And not that God is being vindictive, but God has determined that you and I would be the kind of people that would trust him and him alone. Not the stuff that he gives. He doesn't want us to be focused on the gift. He wants us to be focused on the giver. He doesn't want us to be focused on the thing that gives us hope. He wants us to be focused on the God that gives us the thing that gives us hope. And if that's gone, that's gone. God is still on his throne. Those are powerful truths when the storm begins to blow. Now, all along the way, Paul and his friends have been in a small boat in a big storm. I realize there's almost 300 people on this boat, but they've been in a small boat in a big storm. But then, they lost the boat. And I'd like to suggest to you today that the only thing that's worse that's being in a small boat in a big storm is being out of a small boat in a big storm. Wouldn't you agree with that? I mean, at least there's a boat. You know, at least we have a boat. You could always say that. They probably said that to each other every morning when they woke up as the hurricane continued. Well, at least we have a boat. Yeah, well, brace yourself, boys. You're not going to have it long. God takes the boat itself away. Remarkably, God asks them to get out of the boat. In fact, he makes them get out of the boat. Jump in the water, they're told. And I love it. Those of you who can swim, and I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but you get in difficulties. I don't always feel like I can swim when things get difficult, right? The water's down there raging, and I'm not sure that I can swim in that. I'm just saying. But those of you who can swim, jump out of the boat. And those of you who can't swim, jump out of the boat. This is our plan. Oh, those of you who can't swim should probably try to find a box, or styrofoam didn't even exist then, so they couldn't take the cooler that the shrimp was in. I just know that. Find something to float on if you can't swim, you know, and then you can reprimand yourself for being on a small boat when you don't know how to swim. That's just pretty, well, I won't say that because this is the Ozarks and probably some of you do that, you know, on a regular basis in the summer. I'm just saying. If you can swim, jump in. If you can't swim, jump in. That's our plan. And to my mind, this is a beautiful picture of life for those people who follow Jesus. For those people who would raise their hand and say, yes, I am one of God's people. I belong to him. It's a slice of life. It's a picture of life. Because the ship is full of sailors and soldiers and reliable, dependable, strong, capable men. And up until this point, they have been keeping themselves alive by their own wits, by their own abilities. They've been managing this thing, you want to say, well. Running 2 weeks in front of a storm without eating, I'm not sure that they've been managing that all that well. But they've been doing their best, and listen to me, we've come to a place where their best just isn't cutting it anymore. And I think it's time for us to just stop and pause for a moment and wonder if you've ever been there. Wonder if maybe you're there right now. Where things have just, they've spun out of control. And the way that you've responded to that is by taking things into your own hands, trying to grab the reins and get this horse's head that's just running away with this situation. Getting things under control. And if you're anything like me, the harder I work at being in charge, the harder I work at being in control of the situations I'm in, the more blindly stupid things turn out. The more they spin out of control, the more difficult they are. That's just part of trying to be in control. But then we get to the point where every hope is lost, and God responds to that by taking everything else away from them, just like he does from us. We talk about hitting bottom. Those of you who have ever been into rehab or have known anyone who was dealing with those issues in his life, you may be dealing with issues in your own life that make things very, very dark that nobody knows anything about. But you know those moments when you come to the place where you realize I've tried so hard and I've applied myself and, well, this just isn't working. I've been in control and it's not working. I've been in charge. And that's why we talk to people about looking to God for help. Because when you and I are in charge of our own lives and when we take control, or attempt to take control of the outcome of our lives, well, it doesn't work. Because whether we realize it or not, listen, the things that are most important in life are the things over which we have the least control. If it's too hot in here, we can turn the thermostat down. If it's too cold in here, we can turn the thermostat up. But what are you going to do if one of your children has made up their mind that they're just going to disobey? They've made up their mind that they're just going to rebel. There is no thermostat. There's nothing you can grab a hold of. Well, I mean, you may want to twist their nose. I don't know. But there's nothing that you can, that's where parenting comes in. And that's where being skilled at parenting comes in. And that's why we're offering the parenting seminar in January. And that's the last commercial. But God takes everything away from them, including the boat itself. And we have to wonder why God would do such a thing. Why would he get to the place where there's only the boat left? That's all. The cargo's gone. The tackle's gone. Everything's gone. There's just the boat. And now God says, turn the boat in, please, as well. You're going to have to leave that at the door. You can't take the boat onto the island with you. I'm sorry. That's just the way this is going to work. Why would he do that to them? I think it's clearly because he wants them to be forced to trust only him. And please understand, this is not just about the people on that boat. It's about me. And as I watch what happens to Paul and those other guys as they jump into the water, I realize that I'm on a journey too. It's not in a small boat in a big storm, or is it? But I'm on a journey too, and it may just be that God is taking you on a journey as well, and you've recognized that. And things in your journey seem to be going from bad to worse, but it may be that you'll end up trusting God in the end more than you do now. You hear me? Because that's his goal. He wants to prove himself to you in the midst of the most bleak circumstances so that when things get dark and difficult, whether they're dark and difficult or bright and sunny, your inclination is to trust God because you've learned that that's the only way to make your way through life. And I don't mean to be cliche, but I believe that when it comes to God, the thing that you do or should do when you finally get to the end of your rope, you ever been to the end of your rope? And when we say that you just tie a knot and hold on, I've never been good at tying a knot with one hand, I'm just saying. But they say tie a knot and hold on. You know what I'm suggesting this morning? You know what the boat tells us? That when you get to the end of your rope with God there in the room with you, with God there in the angry waves, the best thing that you can do is just let go. Just let go. Casting Crowns has put it this way. Your world's not falling apart. It's falling into place. You're not alone. God's on the throne. So stop holding on and just be held. Just be held. Trust him to wrap his arms around you. Trust him to hold you in his strong and mighty hand and work you through the situation that you're facing right now. I'm not saying it's easy to learn to trust God on that level. I'm just saying that God often brings us to the point where trusting Him is the only option. Why? Because that's the only way He can get us to rely on Him. Because as long as there's another option out there, I descended from Adam. And one of the things that Adam did for me is he figured out a way to make life work without God. And at the very core of my being is Adam's nature. I am always looking for ways to make life work without God. That's what Adam did. That's what I do. He does this because he wants to bring us to the point where trusting him is the only option. In the Jackson household, we have an old joke. It's an old joke. We've been telling it since the kids were little. We've gotten ourselves in a few situations that didn't look like they were going to turn out very well. Trust me, typhoons and otherwise. We weren't sure what the outcome was going to be. And then somebody in the family, usually my wife, would say, well, we're just going to have to pray about it. We're just going to have to trust God. And then one of us, usually me or even one of the kids, would say, oh, surely it hasn't gotten that bad that we would actually have to pray about this and trust God for it. Surely there... Yeah, I didn't say it was a good joke. I said it was an old joke, okay? It's what we do to taunt one another. We're finally in a place where we're saying the only thing we have left is prayer. The only thing we have left is trusting God in this situation. Things are that bad. Don't leave prayer as the last resort. Make sure it's the first course of action when you see the storm begin to brew. Make sure you're asking God, God, when we get on the other side of this, it's going to hurt. I know it's going to hurt. But when we get on the other side of this, I want to be trusting you more than I am right now. And now we're at the point where it's time to move on. The ship's run aground. It's been destroyed. And Paul and the others are no longer concerned with getting to Rome. They're concerned with trying to stay warm and dry while the rain hasn't stopped. It's still raining. It's cold. Winter months have only begun. 3 months of winter have arrived there in that part of the Mediterranean. They find themselves in a place that they've never been before. They're on the island of Malta. It takes them a little while to figure that out. But they find themselves in a place where they've never been before, surrounded by a group of people that they don't know. It's a people group. We're not sure who was living there on Malta. These are not Romans. These are not Roman citizens, though Rome is in charge of Malta. Paul is actually, and I love this, he's actually meeting with a new people group that live there on Malta. And here's the deal. Listen, Paul is about to spend 3 months in a place where he's never been before among a group of people that he doesn't know, a group of people who don't know Jesus. So I'm going to give you three guesses as to how Paul is going to spend his time there on the island of Malta. And the first two don't count, so that would be like five guesses altogether. I hope it wouldn't take you that long. I hope you have enough experience with who Paul is to understand how he's going to spend his time. But in all of this, and it's going to come out in the story, it becomes very clear that God isn't finished with Paul yet. In fact, there's a lesson or two that Paul needs to learn about trusting God. So I'm going to challenge you to be listening for that as we make our way through the story. And with that background, this is the story from God's Word from Acts chapter 28, verses 1 through 16. The morning came, they jumped into the water, and those that could swim made their way to shore, and the ones that couldn't swim grabbed something that they could float with and made their way to shore as well. And the final outcome of all of that is that all 276 people that had been aboard that ship actually survived that two-week hurricane and the shipwreck. And it became clear once they were ashore, once it was light, they hadn't recognized the place. Even the captain, the pilot of the ship, did not know where they were. He didn't recognize that coastline. And so they began to ask around. They met some people there. It was still raining and drizzling and cold. And you've been in situations like that. There's nothing worse than, well, the only thing worse than being wet is being cold and wet at the same time. I think you'd agree with that. You know how much colder it feels when it's raining out and the temperature is low. And so they talk to the people there and discover that they've landed on the island of Malta there in the Mediterranean. I guess I should bring that up there. They've landed on the island of Malta there in the Mediterranean. And we're not exactly sure where they were on that island, but that's off kind of the southwest coast of Italy. So they're on their way to Rome. They're closer to Rome than they were when they started, and they're still not at Rome. Well, I start talking to the people there, and turns out these are very nice people. They have compassion for the guys that have just survived this shipwreck and been driven by the wind and the waves for 14 days, and now they're hunkered down. And I want you to just grab that picture, okay? They're hunkered down around this fire that the people from Malta build. And that's a skill all by itself, isn't it? If it's been raining for 2 weeks and you're out in the woods, the chances of finding some wood that you can light on fire, I don't know. So they've built this fire and they're gathered around the fire. And then Paul is sitting there with the rest of them around the fire. And, well, he's not a guy that's just going to sit around and let other people serve him. So he got up and went out and he grabbed some sticks. And because Matt, you know, they'll burn a lot more quickly once they get onto the open flame. He grabbed a bundle of sticks and carried it back to the fire and tossed the bundle of sticks into the fire without realizing that there was a poisonous snake wrapped around those sticks. It looked like a stick itself, I imagine. There's a poisonous snake that's wrapped around it. And, well, the poisonous snake, the viper, took exception to Paul throwing him on the fire for some reason. Must have been just in a bad mood or something, but it took exception to being thrown on the fire, and it actually launched itself more or less out of the fire and attached itself to Paul's hand. And so Paul is there now with that snake there on his hand. You can see it kind of, it's almost got him right there, and well, now, you know, he kind of stumbles back from the fire, as you might in a situation like that, and the snake is actually still literally hanging from his hand. Well, the people from the village there, from Malta, see what's happened, and they say to themselves, they turn to each other and they say, look at this poor jerk. I mean, he must have done something really, really bad. Think about it. He escapes the hurricane and the shipwreck and gets here on the shore, and he's bitten by a poisonous snake. Are you serious? Well, you know, they said to each other, the goddess of justice is not going to let him get away with whatever he did. And now Paul is standing there with the snake on his hand, and I don't know if it's, you know, if the Bible is a very helpful book, and if it ever happens to you that you have a poisonous snake attached to your hand, a really good thing to do with it would be to shake it back into the fire. And that's what Paul did. I don't know if the snake is about to bite him in the picture or has just bitten him and is being shaken back into the fire, but, you know, Paul deals with it. But this kind of snake is the kind of snake that once you get bitten, you start to swell up. I have friends in the tribe, a very good friend in the tribe, passed away a couple of years ago, but 20 or so years ago, he was bitten by a viper, and I can't even begin to describe to you how terrible his arm looked. He was bitten right here on his hand, like the Apostle Paul. They looked at Paul and they thought, well, you know, he'll swell up. Surely he'll swell up. And the way this snake works is you start to swell up and the swelling continues and then suddenly you're dead. It's like, you know, I don't know, you punch your ticket and your day's up. And, well, they expected that to happen and they watched Paul very closely and he didn't swell up. He didn't get dead. In fact, there didn't seem to be any kind of consequences at all to this poisonous snake to have bitten them, and so they changed their minds about him. They said he must be a really, really bad dude, you know, because the goddess of justice is going to let him have it. They changed their mind from that, and now they started saying, he's a god. He must be. I mean, how else could he have survived that kind of a deal? Well, Paul hunkers back down around the fire, and word gets out that this has happened to Paul, that the snake hasn't been able to affect him at all, and maybe he's a god, I don't know. And so this guy named Publius, which sounds like he owns a grocery store down in the south, but this guy named Publius, he owns a big estate there. He's the Roman guy, the Roman procurator for the entire island of Malta, and he hears about Paul, and he invites Paul and some of his traveling companions, which were all Jesus followers, to come to his estate and stay there, and he ends up staying there for 3 days. And while he's there, Paul learns that Publius's father, who is an older man by this time, has a high fever and dysentery. And I've also had dysentery, so I know what that's like. It's no fun. And so Paul sits with, goes in and visits the man, recognizes how near he is to death, and then comes back out and sits with the Jesus followers that are traveling with him, and they pray together for that man. And then Paul goes back in and touches this man, Publius's father. He touches him on the side, and the man sits right up and is completely well. He's completely healed. Well, of course, something like that is going on. Everybody wants in on that. So anybody that's sick or well, the whole island of Malta shows up at the home of Publius, and Paul is able to minister to everyone, and everyone that was sick is healed in the process of that time. Well, it's been winter. 3 months have gone by. They're there on the island for 3 months, and now it's time to go to Rome, because remember, it would have been easy, I think, to forget at this point what it is that they were actually doing. They were on their way to Rome so Paul can make his appeal to Caesar. So Julius, who is the commander, goes and finds another ship. It's a ship that's decorated, and it's not an important point. I don't think there's anything powerful about it, but the twin gods Castor and Pollux are right out there on the front of the ship, you know, on the bow of the ship. And so Julius feels confident that this is going to be a safe ship to be in. They get in, and they go to Syracuse, and they spend about 3 days there. And then from Syracuse, they go to Regium, and then from Regium to Puteoli. And Puteoli, they're there for a week, or Puteoli, I guess we would say, because by now they're in Italy. Puteoli, so it sounds more like something you'd eat at a restaurant. But, you know, a big, anyway, they made their way to Puteoli, and they stay there for an entire week because they find some believers there, some followers of Jesus. They get in the boat one last time, and a southerly wind from the south begins to blow, and that sets them up right off the coast from Rome. Paul gets off the ship and is surprised to see an entire contingent of Roman believers, people who were followers of Jesus in Rome, have made their way all the way from Rome to where Paul is because they want to accompany him back to Rome. And I don't know if this means anything to you, but the great apostle Paul, it actually says, his heart was encouraged that they would go to those lengths to welcome him to Rome. He finally gets to Rome, and now the long business of waiting for his appeal before Caesar begins, and well, Paul finally is going to stand there. He'll stand trial, but in the meantime, he's given the opportunity to live in his own house and to take care of himself there. His friends come and stay with him while he waits to make the appeal to Caesar, and that is the story from God's Word. I think that we all have to agree that Paul's had quite a time of it. Would you agree with me on this? This has been quite... All he's supposed to do is go to Rome. That's what God has asked him to do. You've got to go to Rome. And that's really what he's been trying to do. He's been trying to get to Rome, except for these minor interruptions like shipwrecks and, you know, hurricanes and all of the other stuff. And I have to say that pretty much everything that could go wrong has gone wrong. Would you agree with that? That's what's happened to the Apostle Paul. And the people on the island, they get that. The goddess of justice is out to get this guy. So, I mean, seriously, he goes through the hurricane. He survives the shipwreck, and now he's arrived on the island there, and he's bitten by a poisonous viper. He's really, really bad. And I don't think that we would blame Paul if he would be thinking the same way. Would you? I mean, if Paul were to in confidence take you aside and start to say, you know what, I've been talking to God lately, and I've been saying, hey, God, are you paying attention? Really, God, or are you? Because I'm just down here trying to serve you, but you don't seem to get it. If Paul took you off to the side and just shared that with you in confidence, would you look Paul in the eye and say, shame on you, Paul. What is the matter with you? Or would you say, buddy, I am with you on this. I mean, where is God? Why would God not be supporting you? He tells you to go to Rome, and then that's the one thing you can't do. You can't get to Rome. He doesn't seem to get it. I mean, what does a guy have to do to get a break down here? It would be easy for Paul to be thinking that. And I wonder if sometimes you feel that way. You're trying to serve God. You're trying to do works of service. You're trying to help out. You're trying to be a blessing to other people. But things keep happening that prevent that. And you want to talk to God and say, God, I'm just trying to serve you. I'm just trying to do what you've asked, and here I am in the middle of this mess. And I wanted to share with you, I think most of you know that I wasn't here last Sunday those of you who don't know that I wasn't here last Sunday, the guy with the bald head was not me. It was actually Chad, and I was glad that he was here to, well, anyway. I was actually in Philippines and Singapore last Sunday and all of last week, and it's the last time this year, and people ask me sometimes if I ever get tired of traveling, and I have to admit to you that I do. I get tired of traveling, particularly when I have a trip like this one was, and I'll share some of that with you in the couple of minutes that we have left here, but I'm always glad to be done with a trip because I get home, but I was particularly glad to be done with this last trip to Asia because it was one of those trips that went badly from the start. It turned bad the night before I left. The night before I left was two Sundays ago. I left on Monday morning. And you may or may not remember it, but that particular Sunday night, the Patriots played on, you know, Sunday night television. And I actually ended up getting to bed too late to get enough sleep to make the trip the next day. They played another NFL team. And well, I was really hoping, you know, because they were 10-0. And anyway, I'll share with you. But when they came to the end in the overtime and Gronkowski got hurt, I forget, it was the other team that hurt him. Well, you know, I saw the look on Tom Brady's face, and anyway, they lost the game. Yeah, they lost the game, and that should have tipped me off. That should have tipped me off to just staying home from this trip. It really should have, but it didn't, you know, being the guy that I am. But it did mean that I only got 2 hours of sleep the night before I had to get up and head for the airport, which happens quite often to me because I have to leave so early for the airport. But it was raining, and it rained all that night and all the way to the airport. And whenever it's raining and the wipers are doing this, there's just something that makes me even sleepier, particularly when I've only had 2 hours of sleep. And then I got to the airport, and we're there in St. Louis, and when I arrived at St. Louis, I was informed after I got there that my plane was going to be 2 hours late, which could have been 2 hours that I had slept instead of wandering around the airport, but hey, am I bitter? Well, yeah, a little bit. But anyway, it's going to be 2 hours late. And so we got on the plane 2 hours late and headed for Minneapolis. And we got to the gate there at Minneapolis. And G4 right there is where the plane that goes to Tokyo is always sitting. And we actually taxied by that all the way down to G22. And the plane was sitting there. And so I got out of my plane at G22 and went running. I mean, I'm like glorious when I run, especially pulling a suitcase. And I was running down that concourse. And by the time I got up to G4, the plane was gone. And so the lady said to me, well, we can put you on the plane tomorrow. And I said, listen, I have a 5 o'clock meeting on Wednesday in Manila. I've got to get to that meeting. I can't miss that meeting. So she, you know, did the thing on the keyboard, and she said, well, we can send you, you can go by way of Amsterdam. You go to Amsterdam on Delta, and then from Amsterdam, you go to Singapore on Singapore Airlines, and then from Singapore, you'll go on Philippine Airlines to Manila, and, you know, you'll probably be on time for your meeting. So I said, I didn't like that, but I didn't have any choice. So I said, great, let's do that, and I got to see the airport there in Amsterdam. It's a very nice airport. And then by the time I got to Singapore, I thought to myself, I should check and see if my bags are here on the airplane, because my bags have been known to just like go on trips of their own. I was going from St. Louis to Orlando one time, and my bags actually went to Sydney. They had a better vacation than I did. I'm not making that up. And so I went up to the lady at the counter, and I said, are my bags on the plane? I just want to check and make sure. And she did that thing, you know, because she looked like she really knew what she was talking about. So she did that thing where she, you know, she got down to the keyboard and went, and then she did this. I hate it when they do that. She said, and I love this. I am not making this up. She actually said to me, well, either your bags are on the plane or they're not. And I wanted to say, light of my life, thank you for clearing that up. But I knew I still needed her help, so I wanted to be nice. So I said, well, okay, I don't suppose there's any way of narrowing that down a little bit. And she said, well, no, really, there isn't any way of narrowing it down because I've called all the terminals and nobody has seen your bags. I said, okay, so what should I do? She said, get on the plane. And you'll go to Manila, and when you arrive in Manila, it gets better. When you arrive in Manila, you will know whether or not your bags were on the plane when you get to baggage claim, because either, are you ready for this? Either your bags will be there at baggage claim, or they won't. See, you should have been there. You could have helped me instead of me relying on this woman. And by that time, I was with the patients there. So I said, well, I didn't call her light of my life, but I said, thank you for clearing that up. And, well, I got to Manila and ended up waiting there at baggage claim. That's baggage claim in Manila. No, the bald guy right there is not me. That might be Chad. I don't know. But I'm waiting there at baggage claim, and I had the privilege, and you've probably done this at one time or another, watching everybody else light up as their bag came. So now I got no bags, and so I went to the guy that sits at the counter there, and then I said to him, my bags didn't arrive. And you know what he said to me? He said, well, they weren't on the plane. I said, I should have figured that out. You know, I should have figured that out. He said, but they're in Singapore, and they're going to, I don't know how they found them in that amount of time, but they're in Singapore, and they will be on the 12 o'clock plane, and we will just send them to your house. Should be there by 5:30 in the morning, which would have been really cool. So we went, I went to the meeting. By the way, the meeting that I was trying not to be late to, I was late for that meeting, but that's another story. And then now I'm caught in traffic, and I finally make it home at about 8 p.m., and we call, and they say, we don't know anything about your bags. They weren't on the 7 o'clock plane. And I said, well, but they will be on the 12 o'clock. I said, well, okay, we can do that. Anyway, long story short, 1:30 in the morning, the phone rang, and here's my bags, and now it's 6 o'clock in the morning, and it's time to head out for breakfast. And so I went to that meeting and went to a long meeting the next day, and then got caught in traffic on the way home. And it actually took me 4 hours to go 20 miles, and in case you're math challenged, keep your shoes on. That's 5 miles an hour that I averaged during those 4 hours coming from one place to the other. I got in there to Manila to Stephen Jen's house, and the phone rang. And it's the guys in Singapore, where I'm going on Sunday. I'm supposed to go to Singapore and speak on Sunday and do a walkthrough in the book of Romans. We've been studying Romans all year. And this is our big final walkthrough, like we did the walkthrough on Genesis at the end of last year. It's our big final walkthrough, and we've been planning it all year long. But they called to say that the people at the, we're working through Romans, the people at SunTech Center, where I'm supposed to speak on Sunday, have gotten in touch with them to say, we need to get police clearance for this guy that's going to speak. He's clearly a foreigner. And by the way, police clearance takes 5 weeks to get. And so in case you're, again, math challenged, this means essentially that if I speak in Singapore on Sunday morning, I'm going to be arrested. And it's at this point that I start thinking, why did I come on this trip? You know, I could be at home sitting on the couch watching reruns of CSI. I don't know. I could be doing something that would be a lot more fun than where I am right now. Excuse me? I am going to, for those of you who didn't hear that, it wasn't worth hearing. Watching the Patriots lose again. Do not make me come back there. I'm glad I did not even see who said it. Yes, they lost again on this particular Sunday when I was not speaking in the church in an effort to avoid being arrested. So what are we going to do? I called the guys in Singapore back and I said, listen, let's do it this way. You guys are going to be the ones to do the review. You guys are going to be the ones to walk us through the rest of the book of Romans. Yeah, but Jay, I know. We've got a plan here. We've had a plan all year. All year long, we've had this plan. But God clearly has a different plan. Are you catching this? It's Paul going to Rome. I am not trying to say today, well, you know, Paul was in a shipwreck, but I lost my luggage. I'm not trying to say that. I'm just trying to give you some perspective on what happened with Paul as everything seems to come apart. And I have to do it very, very quickly. Really, very, very quickly. I will, anyway, I'm in Manila, and I've gone through a lot of these notes here without paying any attention. Our plans failed, but not because we failed to plan. They failed because God preempted our plans with a plan of his own. Did you catch that? God preempted our plans with a plan of his own. We had an idea of what we were going to do. We'd been working on it all year, and God just kind of goes, and it's gone. Our plans failed, but because God preempted it with a plan of his own. And as we, I have to ask, is God getting back at Paul for something, the shipwreck, the viper? Was Paul getting back at me? Was God getting back at me, Paul? Was God getting it back at me because of something that... The reason I'm asking that is I hear from Jesus' followers all the time, stuff's going really wrong, Jay. I've got plans here and they're just not working out. I wonder if God is mad at me. And I'm telling you today, we spend too much time wondering if God is mad at me when we should be wondering what God's plan actually is. How do I chase this thing down? How do I take advantage of what God clearly has in mind for me here? Maybe God's messing with you today because he's angry with you about something. Maybe God was messing with me because he was angry with... Maybe God was messing with Paul because he was angry with Paul. But I'd like to suggest to you that the mess in Paul's life wasn't about Paul at all. The mess in Paul's life wasn't about Paul at all because Paul's plan was to get to Rome, but God had another plan, and God's plan was... Could you say that with me? Better. God's plan was better than Paul's plan. How do we know that? Because everybody on the island of Malta gets to hear the good news, and that was never on the radar for Paul. That was never part of Paul's radar. God had a better plan. You know what happened on Sunday morning? I sat right there in the front row of that big church, and I watched six guys that I have been discipling for 3 years now stand up and walk the entire church through the book of Romans. I mean, it was just, it was absolutely powerful. And then I got back in my car on the way home from the airport, and I sat and I listened to Chad and Carl. Patriots and ball jokes notwithstanding, I listened to Chad and Carl walk you guys through another chapter in the book of Acts. The guys in Singapore proved to the church that they have what it takes. The guys here consistently do that as well. And as far as I'm concerned, I want you to understand that that's an early Christmas present to me from God. Because his plans are better. So that's where we want to leave it. So stop worrying about whether God is angry at you and start looking around at what's happening as a result of the mess in your life right now. It might just be that God is actually using the mess in your life right now to speak into the mess in someone else's life. Not only for his glory, but for their good. And if that's what's happening, that's good for you too. Now, I'm here and took too long to get to the point. It's been a good year. Next Sunday's Christmas Sunday. We're going to have people here that we're not used to having. Invite your friends, really truly, invite your friends for next Sunday. Because we're going to look at the way God dreams. I'll tell you just that much. God's dream. And then the following Sunday, we'll be doing the end of the year. It's December. We have two Sundays left. And I keep thinking to myself, where did 2014 go? Would you stand with me in the presence? And as you do, think about the mess in your life. Because we're going to pray through it right now. And we're going to ask God to keep messing with you if by messing with you, he's speaking to the mess in somebody else's life. Let's pray. Father, it's taken us a long time to get here. Next Sunday won't be this long because we'll have people that aren't used to listening to me talk all this time. But for right now, God, we come to your presence and we ask you that you would work in our hearts, that you would challenge us to our very core. That you'd help us to recognize that we do have plans. We all have plans, and we'd like to see them done, especially those plans that involve you and ways that we intend to please you and ways that we intend to serve you and reach into the lives of others. But God, help us to understand, not just to understand, but to embrace the idea that we live through, that we live with the refiner's fire licking all around us. God, our lives have been etched with sin, and yet you have, by your mercy, erased that in our lives. And so, God, we love the idea of the refiner's fire, and we ask that you just keep messing with us, God, that you do what's most glorious for you. You do what's best for the people that we love. Thank you for this week that lies ahead, and help us to honor you with every thought and every fiber, we pray. In the name of the Lord Jesus, amen.